Hey, Bill and Gunn, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murimu here with you today. It's been an interesting last couple of days, and today we'll be talking about something that I guess we've touched on a fair bit before, but I think it's important again because the Australian Federal Police are being quite serious about hate speech and cracking down on online groups and others.
There are current and emerging individuals and groups who are eroding our country's social fabric by advocating hatred, fear and humiliation, and the AFP once again is putting them on notice.
Hey, Bill and Gunn, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murimu here with you today as we broadcast around the world thanks to BBM 98.7 FM, the Yidinji Broadcast Service, and of course our friends at NERS, and wherever you are listening to the show, I hope you're doing well. It's been an interesting last couple of days, and today we'll be talking about something that I guess we've touched on a fair bit before, but I think it's important again because the Australian Federal Police are being quite serious about hate speech and cracking down on online groups and others that are sort of centred around fascism or white supremacy groups. Let's take a listen to a recent comment by the AFP, and we'll have a yarn about those things.
There are current and emerging individuals and groups who are eroding our country's social fabric by advocating hatred, fear and humiliation, and the AFP once again is putting them on notice. There is no place for hate or violence in our communities, and the AFP will defend and protect Australia and our future from these threats. There will be no tolerance for groups who advocate or have a propensity for violence. Whether offending occurs online or in person, the AFP will use its unique capabilities and legislation to collect evidence and prosecute those who seek to harm our community. The AFP supports freedom of speech and political expression. There are legal ways to amicably communicate and engage in public discourse. But let it be clear, any alleged criminal behaviour, including threats and harassment, will not be tolerated. If you wish to share extremist views that seek to erode the social fabric of our community, the AFP activity this week is a very explicit warning. The AFP will defend and protect Australia and Australia's future from these threats. For any member of extremist groups who engage in criminal activity, know that the AFP is watching you and is ready to take action.
Kanyara, I'll bring you in. We know that white Australia is not a myth in terms of it's not surprising that these groups still exist because Australia was built for the white man, the British outpost in the Southern Seas and all those types of things. And I think this history is catching up on people today.
Oh, look, you're right with what that comment you made is. Sound like Prime Minister Curtin's response in 1941, in that he says that the white Australia policy, the Commonwealth of Australia, is basically the outpost in the South Pacific, the Southwest Pacific. It's a home of the British people, the white fellas. This is where it is, and that you had to be of a certain culture, certain breeding to come out to here, and that's why they said they wanted to populate it with their people, with the British. This is the homeland of the British down here. And I'll ask everyone, when did the white Australia policy go away? They said, it went away with multiculturalism. No, it didn't. It was said to go away, but it actually didn't. Why? Because you can see it reflected to this very day. Now, you were talking about the federal police. I've got to take my hat off to them. What they're doing is the right thing. They've got to disarm, and I mean this, they've got to disarm the white Australians that have any tendency to want to cause any harm to anyone, let alone to us or to politicians, because I made a comment one day and it was, I tried to explain to people what's really going on here, that the government aren't quite telling the truth about the state of play over the Australian Constitution and the acts of sovereignty, the acquisition of sovereignty. And the bloke said to me, well, we'll just take up guns and we'll shoot blackfellas and politicians. So it really highlighted to me that a white Australian like that, and he was white, he was a white fellow, and but he didn't understand. And he was very disappointed when he learnt the truth of the matter, that he would then resort to violence to try and resolve the matter. That was, this was the very issue. This was the problem in the start. So AFP must, actually all the police forces must do this. They've got to stop the Australians from causing any further harm or damage to the Indigenous nations that have always been here, whose sovereignty is unceded and unextinguished. So they've got a hell of a job ahead of them. And how do you do it? You know, and they're coming out saying to everyone, if you want to go down this road of hate speech, and it's everywhere, you know, they're revitalising the Nazi world, you know, which is what Australia is not about. It was the home of the British, not the home of the Nazis. So they shouldn't be here. And actually, to the extent where I see on, well, it was about a week or so ago, that it was a South African lad who was here with his wife, and he was involved in a march or a demonstration in the neo-Nazi world, and they revoked his visa, and rightly so. This is not the home for any form of violence, let alone neo-Nazi violence. So look, AFP, you've really got a job ahead of you. You've got to disarm the Australians that have any tendency to go wrong. I take my hat off to you for that, because once you understand what the truth of the matter is, it's got to be resolved amicably. We've got to work together. We can't hurt anymore. We don't want to hurt anyone, but we don't want to get hurt ourselves. We've got to do this as grown-up adults.
Yeah, I think there's a very, very important lesson here in that, one, we don't want something like, we saw it with the Cronulla riots or whatever you want to call them down there. We've seen that in other places. We've seen deaths in custodies. We've seen the different forms of violence, let's say. And I don't think anyone wants that. I mean, people, when they're talking about Australia, think about barbecues, beaches, and a good lifestyle. And that's true. There's a lot of good things here. What's going to destroy it is people's insecurity. And the insecurity is Australia's own making. It started this thing. And it's up to the tribes to correct it and to actually bring it back into line through sovereignty. And that sovereignty is what some people are afraid of. They don't understand it. And it doesn't help when politicians themselves, who, you know, have worked against the Yidinji Nation constantly, there's some that don't, but saying that they're going to take your backyard, they're going to steal this, it's going to be this, that, and the other, it's going to be Zimbabwe or whatever the claims may be, we're actually trying to defuse the situation so they don't get shot. And I think that's a very important thing.
Look, there's a number of radio personalities, these shock jocks, that come out with this rubbish to say that you're going to lose your backyard. Then you've got the politicians that are trying to score votes, political votes. You know, look, Pauline Hanson, Bob Catter, all them people, you know, they want to try and maintain the white Australia. They want to try and look where I – look at me, we're doing this, we're doing that, look at us. And they're trying to get the white voter to vote for them. They're trying to secure votes. They're trying to do it the old-fashioned way. You know, you were talking about the people that are out shooting other people. Look at go and read a good book. A really good book is Conspiracy of Silence. Go and buy it and read it by Timothy Bottoms. A great book. It shows you how uncivilized the white fellas were when they came here. Read that book about the massacres, about the murders, about the destruction they reaped upon all the people. You can listen to old uncle, Boomy, when he speaks about Gribble and all what went on there and him over there shooting and bashing people. This was really the aggressiveness of the white fella, the civilized world under their Bible. But this is where it all went wrong. So these young fellas that are coming up now have seen all this. Oh, this is how we do it. We'll shoot black fellas and politicians. You know, that's not the right attitude. The right attitude is to try and resolve this, to get an understanding of what you're trying to resolve. Go back and look at history. Go back and understand what's going on. It's only been in the last few years that Aboriginal people have been allowed, you know, out of the missions, and I'll call them missions. You know, these are, you know, open-air concentration camps. That's what they were. You weren't allowed out of these missions without permission. You weren't allowed to marry without permission. You weren't allowed to do so much without permission. From who? From the white fella, because they considered the Aboriginal people little better than monkeys. If you go and read the original Hansard from 1900 or 1901, Isaac Isaacs and H.P. Higgins, actually say that these people cannot cast an intelligent vote. They're little better than monkeys. So they said, okay, we'll just let them die out.
It's strange because there's a seat named after Isaac, and I think the former Attorney General was Mark Dreyfus was held that. I don't know if he still does or not, but I haven't kept up with it. But you know, the seat of Isaac's and things like that. But Euron, I'm going to bring you in here. If the tree is planted in poison land, then the fruit's going to be just as bad.
Absolutely. What a shame it takes this much work to make people to wake up. You know, it's not that hard to understand. If you have any scrap of humanity within you, how can you treat other people differently in the way that's happened in this country and many others, of course? And, you know, Ganyara, that book you're recommending, it needs to come with a warning because, you know, once you do read it, you can't go back. It sits with you, the ugliness of what happened on the land I was born on and on so many other nations. And so many times I've seen people come across this discovery and they want to go and talk to some Aboriginal person about it. Well, I don't think they quite get it. It's not to share. It's for you to live with the reality of it and carry it with you and deal with other people so that doesn't happen again. And that's probably the biggest lesson that comes from that book, because it still is happening. Just because it's not obvious, like, do you want to count up how many deaths in custody there have been and it's still going on, and the way the children are treated? And, you know, I've been too many times, I've walked in with my friends into different places, whether it be government or commercial, and my friends are invisible suddenly. You know, it's a horrible thing to experience. So, you know, we're not here for no reason. This is a reality, and hopefully people can open their eyes up.
Well, Australia, if once you go black, you never go back. And I'm saying that in a way that if once you start learning the history of this place, you can't unlearn it. And you said it right there, Yirrkala. And, you know, we jest about these things, but there's a serious, absolutely serious thing. If you don't know your history, you don't know your future. And I guess that's where Australia's identity struggles. They're so caught up in yesteryear and really focusing on things that are post 1770 or 1901 onwards, when really the Indigenous histories of this land and the connection and law and everything else is still here. And this is something that the Australian system mechanism refuses to acknowledge and to submit to.
Look, it's not only the neo-Nazis. It's not only them. Understand this, that it's also in all the bodies of the Australian government, you know, including the state governments. It's in the police force, you know, the administration. Now, there was a lad recently that was dragged off public transport because the police mistook him for another one, you know, for someone else who did commit a crime. This bloke was just totally innocent sitting there. But the reason they picked on him was his colour, you know, and he got dragged off and he got detained and he got all this stuff going against him, a young fella, for what? It was racial profiling, racial discrimination. So, look, the over in the Northern Territory, that lad got shot, you know, by a police officer who has now been shown to be racist. You know, he was profiling people based on their colour, on their race. Now, you know, that's a terrible situation to have, but you got to remember that these are relics of the White Australia policy. So inside these, until all the old people die off, you know, as in the Australian government world, the White Australia policy will always remain. There's always that mentality in the very old senior white people, we're more smarter, we're more better. This is, you know, the white supremacist movement. So it's not only the neo-Nazis. It's also in the halls of government. We've been told that in no uncertain terms.
Absolutely, and that's where the Australia Federal Police will have to look at its own colleagues in some of these instances, because there's no because it can be so rotten, it goes everywhere.
Well, let's look at the tracks to treaty stuff that was going on in Queensland with regards the treaty. Didn't Queensland Police Force say that they will not be taking part in the truth-telling? Why? Why wouldn't they take part in truth-telling? Because that's what the conspiracy of silence is about. It's just telling the truth. This is what happened. You've got to understand what happened to the Aboriginal people before you make a decision. Understand what happened. But Queensland Police all of a sudden said, no, we will not take part. Unlike Victoria, Why did Queensland not want to take part? Victoria said, yeah, we acknowledge the sovereignty of those people. It hadn't been ceded. We understand what's happened. This is the bad stuff that's happened. And that was part of the Yurok Commission. So the good stuff does come out of these gammon make-believe, you know, rubbish things like the Victorian treaty process. But why wouldn't the Queensland Police? What have they got to hide? What skeletons do they have in their closet? You got to ask that question.
Yeah, I think the bigger question is the Royal Death and Custody's recommendations to this day haven't been fully adopted in jurisdictions across Australia. So, you know, you've got reports and reports and reports after another, coronials, parliamentary sittings, committees, X, Y, Z, and the I'm sorry to say this, but it's two steps. One step forward, two steps back, because Australia does have this tendency to be racist. Now, it's not it doesn't mean all Australians are racist. I'm just saying that the system is being built on that racism or that pro-European British whiteness.
Oh, you mean Australia is a manifestation of colonialism, that one. Are you talking about that where the imperial indivisible crown... So it become divisible and become the crown and right of Australia, that one where the same monarch, you know, the same bloke, Charlie, who's the monarch of the UK, is now the monarch of Australia, is the monarch of New Zealand. You mean that same one there, that's a British... So it is a manifestation of colonialism, which the world said must come to an unconditional, a speedy and unconditional end, back in 1960, by the way. Hang on, I'm just trying to do the maths, you know. What's that, 40 plus 25? Oh, you mean 65 years ago? Over half a century ago, they said the world must go back to where it come. Why haven't they? And why did they leave the White Australia policy here, which is what the Australian government really is?
I think it's really important too, Yurilam, I'll bring you back in, because it's like I'm not saying we can't change history. We know that. But what I can point to is that the Yidinji Nation didn't go to Southeast Asia or to Europe and invade and decimate people, because – by doing that, then they would have planted a seed that would probably come back to haunt them in the future. And that's why I think the we can't underestimate the power and value of Indigenous wisdom and leadership through elders. And I can't emphasise that enough about how Australia is quite peaceful because Aboriginal people know the value of peace. We're not raising an army to get payback, and even though payback at tribal under tribal law exists, it's still you're going to have to think about that's a last resort, so to speak. But we're not even close to that stage because of the strength of elders, not only here in Gimoy and other places, but all around the world.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, one thing, and it was an incredible experience that was shared with me when a friend of mine travelled to the International Indigenous Conference in Canada 20 years ago and was recognised by the elders there as being of the First Nation. You know, different to everybody else, he didn't understand why he was being treated in the way that he was with such reverence. And That's the point of the whole wisdom. You know, the first cultures of the earth originated here. This is the longest living cultures. So from that culture, there is, you know, you have places in the world, Australia is one of them, that, you know, talks about the spirituality or God. And but this is a living culture that knows it, that understands it, that has always acted with equality in the spirit, knowing that each human being is equal at that level. And that's how all decisions are made. It's not. I don't think it's that hard to understand. And yet, this continues to be a high degree of egotistical, only thinking about yourself actions. Even though there's large groups of people doing it, there it's a group of people thinking about each themselves, not as for the group or what's best for everybody. So, you know, the basic morals that need to be addressed. You know, look how Australia celebrates Anzac Day. You know, and the courage of those men and women. Well, you know, courage is a big step, is a moral, very important moral aspect. But it takes courage to read the Conspiracy of Silence, the book you talked about, Gunyara. it takes courage to read that. You know, not many people have the guts. They make all sorts of excuses, but people don't really want to know the truth.
But even then, you mentioned the Anzacs and the Black Diggers and stuff are still forgotten about, and it's not. It's like slowly coming to surface now. But I mean, even that was an imperial sortie of some sort to, it glorifies the Anzac spirit. I'm not saying that that's wrong, because I know lots of people that have, have represented and fought for this continent, and that's an honourable thing. If done in the right way. But what we're talking about is sometimes these things can be politicised to push an agenda, and the sovereignty of the Indigenous tribes shouldn't be one of those things that are trying to be absolved or forgotten.
Oh, look, what they're trying to do with the Anzac story, and that is to try and king and country, you know, which is fair enough. You don't mind that. But if you really want to know the truth of what happened, you go back to the Boer War, where they did take Aboriginal trackers from here, and they wouldn't let them come back to here because they said, no, you're a black, you can't come back to Australia, you stay in South Africa now. Out you go, you can't come back to your country. Let's go to the Yorta Yorta mob. I know firsthand there, you know, some of the soldiers who did go and fight, you know, some of the Aboriginal people who fought in World War One weren't allowed to come back and get settler blocks. They'd taken off their country. In World War II, the same thing. When they went and fought, they weren't allowed to come and get settler block, you know, soldier settler block. No, you're the black fellas. You can't have this. Even though you went and fought and died for the country, you weren't allowed to have any privileges of the country. So, you know, this is how stupid and how bent and twisted it's been. I'm not saying, you know, that the Anzac stuff is anything else other than the story that Australia wants, but how about we tell the whole truth? Nothing but the truth. Every part of it, the good, the bad, and the ugly. That's why the conspiracy of silence is so important. It tells people just how bad it was that the white fellas, you know, were. When they come with a Bible in their hand and also a gun. Understand what happened. So it's not picking on the white Australian. We need to resolve the past, and that's where truth-telling comes in, but we've got to secure the future for everyone. And I'm actually talking to academics about the foundation of Australia. Where does Australia put its constitution? On what piece of this land does it put it? Because if it hasn't got the proper standing at law, international law, that's why I keep asking, where's your doctrine? Under what doctrine did you acquire Australia? Because remember in 92, the High Court said the make-believe world of terra nullius is gone. We don't believe in that anymore. So under what doctrine did you get the country? So they got nothing. You know, they've made it all so gammon, all so fake, all so everything that's against trying to sort out this foundation.
You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet today, and wherever you are listening to the show, I hope you're enjoying it, and we'll catch you after the break.
Hey, you're here with John Paul Janke, and you're tuned into BBM 98.7 FM.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. Ginyara, there was an interesting article online of international people and business people talking about how Indigenous peoples were not empire builders, but, well, he used the word empire builders, and that they've been doing that for a long time, and maybe countries like Indonesia would be interested in supporting Indigenous rights and things like that. It's interesting now that international players are coming to the table to look at this as something to help remedy. Obviously, Australia is still dealing with that internally, and I think that's an important thing. Obviously, you know, out of all this terrible stuff that we're talking about today, there's going to be something that changes. And, you know, for the people that do change, that's beautiful. And if people that don't want to change, they're going to have to live for that. And that'll be transferred to their children. And, you know, those misunderstandings or bitterness, whatever you want to call it, will always be there if they don't deal with it themselves. So we hope that they can come to the light and actually put their own things to the side to really have a look at themselves. And that's what Australia should be doing. And I think it is doing that somehow, because they know it's not fair. And most Australians are pretty fair dinkum, I think, in their way. I mean, they're not anti-Yidinji or not that, you know, I've gone and asked everyone here, but I mean, I think it's been done in a way that the elders have wanted it to go, and that's through this, let the paper do the work, let the truth talk, and that's a very important thing.
Well, You can't hide from the truth. That's the sad part about it. The truth of the matter is Australia hasn't acquired sovereignty properly. It hasn't perfected it. It's claiming to have sovereignty. It has sovereignty over its citizens, but does it have sovereignty over all things on the territory? Of course it doesn't. They know that. That's why they said in the Uluru Statement, sovereignties coexist. The Aboriginals are the first in time owners. Yep. I tell you what, the rest of the world is starting to see this now. We've been saying for 8 or 9 years now, we met with Senator Waters, going back 2017. You know, if we haven't ceded sovereignty, we got the right to cede it. She goes, yeah, you sure have, because she's a lawyer. Yep, you've got every right to cede sovereignty, if you want. I said, in Parter and Holt, it didn't really matter. We could do a deal, a formal agreement, with someone just to cede a little bit. You know, our protection, for example, form a defence alliance with someone. Now, the rest of the world is starting to see this. Australia knew about it back then 8 years ago, and they've done nothing. They're trying to hide from it. When we went to ANU a couple of years ago, when we got invited to come down there and talk about treaty talks. By the way, why are they talking about treaties for? Why are they talking about treaties if they've perfected sovereignty? They haven't perfected sovereignty. So they're talking to us, say, look, we need to work out a treaty or some sort of formal agreement. What are they talking about in Victoria? Treaty, treaty, treaty. Why are they talking? They don't have it. And the deal is that we can cede sovereignty to whoever we like. No matter who it is, if we want to cede it or we want to hold it all ourselves, we can go and develop our own international persona. By the way, ANU, the Australian National Uni, actually said that to us. Not us saying that. They said we can develop our own international persona, take part in the international world. It's a big task, but we can do that. But we're saying to Australia, look, that's not our preferred way. Our preferred way is to let you do your part in accordance with the Articles of UNDRIP, the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People. We look after our own domestic affairs inside our territory where we claim our world, and you look after the international world. You look after the nuclear fallout from Fukushima that's being polluted in our seas and our fish and all that stuff. You look after that. We'll tell you what to do. But you're going to act for and on behalf of us at international law. This can apply globally. It can apply anywhere. Indonesia, for example, is a good one. What about West Papua? Think about West Papua. The tribes there are being bashed and hammered, and they want to try and break away from Indonesia. That's not the right thing to do. In my opinion, they should be going to the Indonesian government saying, okay, we're going to do the Yidinji way. We'll use UNDRIP. We'll look after ourselves internally. Domestically, we'll look after our own stuff. And by the way, you protect us at international law. You look after us at international law. That's your job, Indonesia. So all these tribes, what happens here with UNDRIP can apply globally, and it should. But Australia is refusing. Now, if they don't come to the table sooner rather than later, they're going to be done away with, because Australia, we can only offer the deal to Australia. If they don't want it, fair enough. There's nothing to force them to take it. They don't have to take it. They've got to come to the table willingly so we can settle the past through, you know, the truth telling. Okay, this is the stuff that happened to us. You know, don't give us any more of them gammon king plates. You know, we didn't have kings like that with these king plates. That's all gammon, make believe. That was all just, you know, you might as well shoot the Murray in the foot, you know, then give him a king plate. You know, but they're the obedient ones. Don't do any of that. We know who we are. We know what's going down. And we're going to offer a deal to Australia. Let's come and talk about it. Let's settle the past. Now, let's secure the future for everyone. And this is what treaties are all about. International law is used between sovereign nation to sovereign nation to actually, you mentioned now, there was on the Andrew Bolt show the other day, only a couple of days ago, they were talking about the Victorian Treaty. And a barrister there, I just forget her name, she actually said that what Victoria is doing is not a treaty. It's only an agreement, just between the citizens. So it's got nothing to do with a treaty, because a treaty is from an international sovereign to an international sovereign. Guess what's in Australia? Coexisting sovereignty. Coexisting sovereignty from one international lot to the other international lot. And this is where Yidinji's putting this forward now. Other countries are starting to understand what's going on, that Australia has not perfected sovereignty. Maybe it can be done away with Australia. Maybe if Indonesia come in, or if China come in, or the Americans come in. Now, if the United States of America comes and says, okay, let's do a deal. Let's raise the American flag on country. We sign off on a deal for protection for everything that we talk about in our treaty document. We're not ceding sovereignty. An alliance, a defence alliance. What about you protect us from the rest of the world, America? Think about that. You can raise your flag here. What happens to all the citizens? They might all become American citizens. Think about the consequence of this. We're saying to Australia, come to the table, talk Turkey, don't worry about all the rubbish, all your make-believe stuff you're trying to do with Victorian treaties and Queensland treaties. Do it properly and do it once and do it forever.
Yeah, I think it's important that Indigenous mob explore these options. We constantly talk about that. if people want to participate in Australia and see that as the future, that's fine too. It's not a problem at all. But that's – you have a stake in the game or a skin in the game in Australia, and you're playing the Australian game. You're playing Australian Monopoly. You're not playing the tribal one. You're not playing Indigenous Monopoly, let's say. And that's the most important thing for people to realise, is that because sovereignty is powerful, it gives you these options of self-determination. So not relying on, with all due respect, Anthony Albanese, let's say, or King Charles, but your mob and your elders and honouring your traditions and customs and things like that, and making people feel welcome who live on your territory to experience and enjoy those things. Here, I think that's what the beautiful thing about the Yidinji way or this pathway we're on is, that it's very inclusive and it's just normal. It's not even – we didn't have to try for that.
Yeah, and people don't really appreciate the social tribal structure, and it really is a model in a lot of ways for how we should be moving forward. You know, we've reached – as a world, we've reached a level of technology that can support everyone. So, you know, the current model of allowing a few individuals to pocket surplus profits rather than the Yidinji model and many other Indigenous nations throughout this continent and the world, that is about sharing. It's about having things move around. You know, the real question is, you know, what is the correct level of ease that everybody can be afforded these days? You know, because it doesn't – it's right now you've got a ridiculous small number of people enjoying, over-the-top amount of lavish and unnecessary versus the large majority of people who are suffering. So, you know, it's about finding the right path for everybody within the nation.
Yeah, Ganyara, I sort of wanted to explore a few more things that you've raised today in terms of the academic community. And we were talking about maybe the intelligence community, the international business community, looking at Yidinji. But obviously there's a keen interest in the academic world. You've mentioned before on the show Anne Toomey, Greg Craven, Asmi Wood, George William, Harry Hobbs, all these thinkers. And Megan Davis as well. I mean, these are – they're not people that – were born yesterday, so to speak. And I say that not as a disrespectful thing to anyone else, but they study the law and they understand parts of the law very well. And yet today, not one of them can disprove Yidinji.
Of course they can't. That's the problem. We're right. They're actually saying we're right, because we understand how the science of law operates. That's why I'm saying about these neo-Nazis and all this sovereign citizen rubbish. You know, people don't like it when I say it's absolute rot, absolute total rot. You couldn't get any more sillier by talking about it. Forget about the, you know, I see Anne Toomey put a little YouTube video out about how the Crown changed in 1973 and how the Constitution changed. You know, the Royal Styles and Titles Manual Act changed. And they said, oh, that changed the Constitution. Show me the Constitution where it was before and after that act. Show me where it did change, or you're making BS up, or you're making rubbish up. So this gets out there and everyone goes, oh, yeah, this has changed, and oh, because we don't like what's happening now, they like to try and look for an excuse. But it doesn't matter what it is inside there. They haven't established the foundation of Australia properly, and they know this. This is where they're talking about sovereignty all the time. You know, Senator Thorpe gets on, you know, a couple of years ago. She's in the Senate there raising the very issue. I think it was November 22, 2022. She's in the Senate raising the issue. Does the voice referendum alter the Aboriginal sovereignty? And Senator Watt goes, no, it doesn't. It can't affect there. And people just can't understand why it can't affect there. You know, the academics understand why, because the constitutional expert group come out with that emphatic no when they advise the Prime Minister that the voice cannot change the Aboriginal sovereignty. It's got nothing to do with this Aboriginal sovereignty. It's not about an issue of sovereignty. The voice was a matter of an advisory group created within Australia. Remember when they said coexisting sovereignty inside the Uluru Statement, you know, the Uluru Statement, Aboriginal sovereignty first in time as the owners, coexist with the sovereignty of the Australian Crown. Now, they're talking two separate things.
Well, yes, and that's important, because you can't have two things and then say you're an internal stakeholder part of the same body. And that's what, you know, what we talked about last week in terms of the Victorian Treaty, yeah, there might be two different cultures inside of Australia or inside of Victoria, but they're still part of the same jurisdiction. And the international treaty model, which we're pushing, is nation to nation or jurisdiction to jurisdiction. And as you've pointed out rightfully, an Aboriginal Victorian or Indigenous Victorian has the same political and legal rights inside of Australia as a Chinese Victorian or a Russian Victorian or a British or a white Australian Victorian. So it doesn't really meet the cut in terms of what we're talking about.
And that's exactly why this barrister come out on the Andrew Bolt show, on the Andrew Bolt report, that what is going on in Victoria is not a treaty. It's not a treaty in any way, shape or form. Even Professor Craven came out in 2015 or 16 said, these are all gammon. These are worse than the king plates hung around the necks of blackfellas, you know, for them to drag behind themselves. You know, look at me, I'm the king. No more. These Victorian treaties, all the treaties that are done by states are not treaties. Because they don't have the international persona. They don't have the authority. They don't have the power to enter into treaties. A treaty is entered into between international actors. And when they said in the Uluru Statement that there is coexisting sovereignty, mean there is another actor created by sovereignty, oh, by the way, they're the first in time ones, that coexist with the sovereignty of the Australian Crown. The Australian Crown does not have a territory, which is why in 2017 we offered a portion of Yidingi land under Yidingi land title to the Commonwealth of Australia, and that was comical because they treated it like it had leprosy on it, but we offered them a piece of land so they could rest their constitution on something so we could negotiate as equals. We could negotiate with Australia because you now have a little portion of territory. Even though it was ours, it's linked to our country, we said we can give you this little piece. We actually done an act over that, for that. So this is where the international academics, you know, the academics who understand international law, who understand constitutional law, these ones are coming out saying, well, we can't recognise their sovereignty that is adverse to the sovereignty of the Crown. For what? What reason? Because we can't see out past the Constitution that creates their position. The High Court's got no chance with this because their High Court is created by the Constitution. By the way, the Constitution that doesn't have a place to rest on yet, except we offered it to them and they refused it. So if another international actor comes in and accepts the offer to rest their law upon our country, then we can talk Turkey, we can talk about a treaty, we can talk about something. But Australia must come to the table first. They've got to come quick. They don't muck around because international people are seeing this. And you just don't know what Aboriginal group will do, other Aboriginal nation. We got our course set. You know, we want to go down this way, but we're not going to wait forever. We can't wait forever because something, you know, the way the world's going, it may deteriorate fast.
Yeah, you can't exceed what's written. That's actually in the Bible as well. Australia sort of set its own, the die was cast back in the day. It's very hard for them to change it now, but we're not waiting for that. In terms of the Yidingi Nation, I think it's important that even one of the senior members of the cabinet of a few years ago said that we're 30 years ahead of everyone else. And I just said, well, we're not waiting that long. We're just going to move forward and you have to catch up. So I think that's where we're at. There's too many people coming into this office looking for support and help, and, you know, there's too many poor Yidingi families and everyone else as well. You just got to have a look around, you know. I think that's where our core business is being prioritised, and there's a sense of urgency to help make that happen sooner than later.
Yeah, you know, that's the probably the biggest lesson that everyone is experiencing, that, you know, all the traditional people of this pre-colonised people of this land are the sovereign owners of the land that they're from. But being sovereign and acting sovereign is two different things. And that's why Yidingi stood up in the way that we have and are acting not just within our own borders or within the borders of the continent we're on, but internationally. You know, the discussions are incredible that are going on there, and are really looking forward to the next few months.
Yeah, that's important too. I mean, the developing those relations internationally has been absolutely been fun, to be fair, because that's part of my work there. But I really enjoy that. But it's getting a lot more serious these days, Ginyara. rather than just getting a photo with a, you know, an ambassador or this, that, and the other, which is, that's part of the meet and greet stuff. That's now transpired and now flowing into diplomatic channels, information sharing, and not only that now, but potential co-design for future Yidinji, sovereignty.
Well, understand what's going on. If you read UNDRIP, the UN Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People, it makes it very clear. We've got every right to use our resources. You know, we can develop our resources how we see fit. Not what Australia says. Not, you know, they talk about oil. You can't go and drill the Great Barrier Reef. Not that we want to for oil. That's an Australian policy, not our policy. You know, should we choose to go and drill for oil, that's our policy. We can do that under our law, not Australian law. They got their reef and they protect it, and rightly so. They shouldn't be destroying anything that's not theirs. But understand what World Heritage is. World Heritage is Australian policy that they signed up for. They didn't have to sign up for it, but they did. So all their timber, you know, that's locked up under World Heritage under Australian law, all of a sudden becomes fair game under our policy to develop our nation. We've got every right to utilise our resources however we see fit for our advancement of our government, of our people, of our everything. This is all ours, not under Australian law, under our law. And this is what sovereignty is all about, the assertion of sovereignty. If you want to assert your sovereignty, and they're not going to give you sovereignty, this is the important part. There was a court case in Queensland a few years back in the Supreme Court where they said, you know, it's not how much sovereignty the government's going to give you, it's how much you're going to take for yourself. And you didn't just say, okay, fair enough, we will take enough to develop our world. We will do our stuff. And something you've got to remember, things like Aboriginal freehold title, guess where that's created? Inside Australia. That means absolutely nothing to the Yidinji nation, to the Yidinji government, to the Yidinji people. Those are Australian titles. And if you start to look at what this Aboriginal freehold title is all about, yeah, you can live there for free if you want until you want to start to get some economic development off it. You want to get a benefit. As soon as you do that, then you're liable for all the Australian government fees and rates and charges. You own nothing if you go into Aboriginal freehold title. And by the way, Australia can compulsorily acquire that block should it need it in the future. So, you know, you don't really own anything under Australian title. Under native title, they say to you, here's your determination. You can go and camp on your country for 2 or 3 weeks, but you've got to move on. Oh, hang on a sec. I thought you owned the place. You own it under your law, under your laws and customs that predate the arrival of the British, that predate the Commonwealth of Australia. Your laws, and that's why they say in the Uluru Statement, these were the first sovereign nations on the country, that's the Aboriginal ones, and they owned the continent under their laws and traditional, you know, traditional laws and customs. They are the owners. And by the way, they are the ones whose sovereignty is reflected in that ownership. It's their ownership is in that sovereignty. So this is the important part for most people to understand. If they own the place under their law, what do you get when you go into the other sovereignty that coexists with the Crown? You get nothing. It's where you come back to your law. You act as owners. You are the owners. You be the owners. And this is where I'm trying to say to everyone, it's in the science of law that you get lost. You get lost in the Australian world through an Australian title, through an Australian legal identity, through an Australian everything. PBCs, they're all Australian. You do not own a thing there. It's held in trust for who? The Yidinji people? Where? Show me which one it is. Who are the proper Yidinji people? Are there any left? And yes, there is. This is the important part. The elders have learnt this stuff many years ago. And they're now starting to assert sovereignty properly. They're starting to do stuff properly. They're starting to say, well, we're back and we'll develop our own international persona so we can go and negotiate with the likes of Australia or Indonesia or America. It's our world. It's our stuff. We'll do it our way.
Yerulam, it's just one of those things. I think most people know it in their heart in terms of our mob. You know, when we talk about it, their eyes light up. It's just the years of being taught in a way that the Australian system, and you know, it works. But once people realise that they can choose to participate in one or the other, that's where the power is, because ultimately a strong Yidinji means a strong Australia or who else that does business here. You know, and I think that's where a lot of our mob are coming from. But that understanding the system and the sovereignty has been so difficult because there's so many different versions and interpretations, and Australia has kept this narrative going inside of Australia to try and repackage its own sovereignty by maybe thinking that Aboriginal people can have sovereignty inside of Australia when they really can't.
No. And, yeah, you say Australia works. Well, it's got a really bad limp. and I think it's got arthritis, so I don't know if it's going to work for much longer. The ability for the traditional owners of the land, and that's what I mean. It's such a big difference for Australia to claim ownership of anything when they don't, and yet the very principles of all the tribal groups on this continent aren't owners of anything. They are responsible for the care and the looking after of the lands they are on, and that's a very, very different approach. You know, you're not violating the land you're on, and in fact, the way that you care for the land you're on is a reflection of your social structure and its success. And that's why I'm saying that the Australian system is diseased, because it ain't looking after its land, and the traditional people are the only ones really who have the right approach that can allow that, not just for themselves. And this is the beautiful part of it. It's about everybody. They're not distinguishing. They understand that we are one race of people on the planet, and that's the beautiful future that anyone living on our nation anyway has got to look forward to once that is established.
You're listening to Black Law Tribal Edition right across the planet. We'll be back after the break with some final closing comments.
Hey, it's Fergus here from Kingswood. Tune in to BBM 98.7 FM for the deadliest country and Indigenous music.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. I guess that, it's when you're looking at the future, Ganyara, a few years ago, it would be difficult for us to perceive that we'd have our own central bank digital currency and digital ID that's internationally ready now. It would be difficult to say that Yidinji has its own or conceive that Yidinji has its own chamber of commerce and now is actively gaining members to spread the Yidinji word and all those things. And I'm just thinking now about the next year and the years to come, there's some really exciting things that are in the background running quite well. And not that we want to overhype those things, but I think a very, very fruitful year for 2026 is on the cards.
Oh, it's not far away. Look, I look at what the white fella done to the Aboriginal people. They picked the worst piece of land they could find that was removed from society, and they rounded up all the Aboriginal people and jammed them in there. Call them missions, open air, concentration camps. Call them whatever you like. They were concentration camps to get the Aboriginal people away off their country, mix them all up, let them all fight, and let them kill themselves and get alcohol in amongst it and drugs and grog and you name it. It just poisoned the people. So what have they got in their little societies now? You go to these Aboriginal communities, these missions, and I call them missions on a purpose because that's exactly what they are. They're not a functioning society. They've got a small little tiny council that has got no ratepayer base, has got no source of funds other than a few little crumbs that the government give them to develop their little community. And why should the government give it much? They want to try and keep the Aboriginal people there so they don't come back to their country proper and start to assert their sovereignty. So these two little communities are all, what are they? They're jammed up concentration camps to where there's no future, no hope for the kids, the upcoming kids. Now, Aboriginal kids are not stupid. They deserve every opportunity, like ordinary, every other kid. They deserve a go. But if you jam up in these missions, where you couldn't find much worse land, they got no hope. So Yidinji saying, okay, that's enough of that rubbish. How about Yidinji territory be utilised for the advancement of all Yidinji people? And look, we've got to be realistic. What are we going to do with the mums and dads of Australia? What are we going to do, kick them out to get all their resources in their house? No. We can't do that. We're not going to do that. And this is where the elders come to this conclusion many years ago that, we'll marry the land titles that the mums and dads have to the Yidinji land title for not $1 for free, but we're going to develop our country and our resources for our people, but also all people. Now, we're talking about things like sovereignty of a digital free trade zone, sovereignty of money, sovereignty of whatever, government. We're talking about this all together collectively for the advancement of everyone, not only Yidinji, but all mums and dads who have worked hard for their country, because we're all humans sitting on this little tiny planet in the middle of nowhere. So we've got to understand that we're not going to chuck mums and dads out. We want them to be part of our world, And Australia can't do much about this because they don't, they haven't perfected sovereignty yet. They haven't acquired sovereignty properly. So we're going to develop our world, no matter what it is, for the advancement of everyone, especially the kids who are so underprivileged now. These kids that go, what do they want to go to school for when they've got no hope in the future? They might get a few jobs in some CDEP program, you know, oh, here's a few dollars to go and stay within the community council. That's not real development. That's not real life for them. That's just keeping them off the streets of you know, the nearest towns. I look at the problems of alcohol. How do we cure that? How do we stop that? Give them some hope. Give them somewhere to go and understand this is their world that they can now bring their grandkids, their kids, their great-grandkids into where there's some future for them. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, I think, you know, having very good yarns with some mayors and councillors of all walks of life in terms of places around the world, up this way especially, Ireland, they're expected to perform miracles out of, you know, I mean, Jesus made all that, you know, out of the bread and fish, you mean big, big banquet. But, I mean, the Shire Councils, I don't think they've got even got bread. They've got plenty of fish there probably. But, I mean, it's really, I wouldn't envy their position because they're trusted by the community to lead the community. But ultimately, they can only go as fast as Australia wants them to go. And that's where the issue is.
Well, of course, the structure of the council itself is an Australian structure. And it's attached to an Australian system, which I've already described as being, you know, on its way out and in a diseased state. It just doesn't work. It's unless we switch over to the right way of doing things, and it's not going to happen in the councils that you're talking about. Of course it can't. So, you know, that's why Yidinji stood up. Here we are with a model that is different. There's a model about including everybody and moving forward together equally at all levels, not just legally but socially, and that's what it's about.
May God's peace be upon you wherever you are listening to this program. It's been a good show, and we'll catch you next week. And may God's peace be upon you wherever you are listening to the program in the mighty name of Yeshua, Hamashiach, Jesus Christ. And we'll catch you next week. Okay, go.
The money calling, you know I gotta answer that. Like, the money calling, you know I gotta answer that. Skirt up the scene, now with the coupe, you know we going fast. And we gon' do the dash, the way ain't gonna crash. Like it's a race, I'm coming first, no, I ain't coming last. Yeah, I'm chasing that cheese, yeah, I'm chasing that grain. If I ain't had music in life, then know where I would be. I do all this all by myself, now I don't need a team. I'm just chasing my dream, Beamer gon' step on the scene. Yeah, I'm chasing these bands, can't tell you fake nowadays, cause everybody's shaking hands. I'm on that grind for that money, now I ain't making friends. Keep it real with this, ain't playing pretend. If you commit to making money, then you gon' succeed. I talk to bro, told him my aspirations and my dreams. I stay up all night writing songs, it get hard to sleep. On the grind Monday to Sunday, every day of the week. I like all my 50s yellow and all my 100s green. Look into my vision and you couldn't see what I see. Got a little clap, but I'm moving on to some bigger things. The day I stop making music is the day that I rest in peace. The day I leave, but I'ma be here for a while. Stacking up these backs, man, I'll be laying in a money pile. Only 14, with the mind of a man, I ain't a child. All this money calling me, my number is what a dial. Like, the money calling, you know I gotta answer that.